Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync call for November the 23rd, the year 2021. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. If others on the call here would like to introduce themselves so people listening along can put a name to the voice, now is a good time for that.
Well, cool. I'll say, hi, I'm Stuart. I've been following Pony for a few years now, but only on and off, so it's well, should be interesting to be in one of the meetings.
Great, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I'm Jason.
I am Red.
Great. So looking at our auto-generated agenda for today, the first thing in our list is pull request 3925 in the Pony C repo. This is entitled Fix CLI Package from Mangling Option Arguments with Equal Signs. Let's see there. This is a new pull request filed yesterday by Borja. I've seen some chatter in the Zulip about it. I have not yet looked at this PR, but I'm sort of familiar with the problem it's solving, where there's an equal sign in the value that you're trying to pass in. It is being treated in a special way because of the way things are split. So let's see, there's some additional tests that are added here, but the real change is only a few lines in command parser.pony. It's using split with the second parameter so that it will only split one delimiter instead of splitting every occurrence of the delimiter. And then, yeah, the parts one index that gets accessed later will get the full rest of the value instead of just whatever part of the value came before an equal sign that was in the value. So yeah, apart from that, it's just adding some tests that do this. That prove this. I think this looks totally great to me. Anybody else have comments about this before I go ahead and merge it otherwise? All right, let's see. It does not have the do not merge. It does have the changelog label. It does have the changelog entry. So here we go, squash and merge. I'm going to edit the commit message for the squash though to just be the same as the pull request, because that is better. The pull request description is better than the auto-generated squash commit it was going to give. So here we go. It has been squashed and merged. Next on our list is I'm going to skip over the work in progress ones for a sec and jump straight to in the Pony C repo, pull request 3788, add readme for each examples entry. This one, I believe it has been marked ready for review. Okay, so that was just what happened in the last sync call. So there's nothing new to discuss here. It's just ready for review. If anyone here or others listening along want to go and review that, that documentation that was added, please do so asynchronously. Or if we have any people who just want to discuss anything related to that on the call, we could do so now. Otherwise, I'll move on to the two work in progress pull requests we have here in the Pony C repo. So one of them is 3924, add support for the LLVM use scheme. So I'm familiar with this one because I assisted Red with kind of walking through the relevant compiler code for it. The summary of it is this would, it was discussed a few syncs ago. In fact, Red helpfully linked to the particular sync call recording where it was discussed. And that was November 2nd, 2021. Basically, if you have an LLVM IR file that you want to include into your compilation, you can do so using this new feature. This is kind of a It's a bit of a workaround to not being able to include like native C in the compilation. You can, there are ways to link against like a static library that you create with C, but this is a little bit of a nicer path in various ways if you can do it. One thing that kind of popped into my head for this, now just kind of beginning to talk about how this works. So, you know, Red, we had the warnings that we see when you do the module link for LLVM. For example, we see this warning linking two modules of different data layouts, and it's showing the two different data layout strings. When I originally looked at this, I said, oh, those are the same-ish because one of them just has more information than the other. But it turns out that this is not true, that they're the same. Somebody in the LLVM Discord mentioned that a few of these values that are present in one string and are not present in the other, at least one of these values is deviating from its default. So it is present in one string and not present in the other. And in the one where it's not present, it's different. The default value is different from the one where it is present. And so it seems that there's something a little bit different about the way that LLVM is generating the target data layout versus the one that was used for Clang when compiling the LLVM IR file that you compiled, Red, for this example. So the other thing that relates to this is, I was just thinking about like the ergonomics of what this would look like. Let's say you were trying to write like a production grade Pony package that had LLVM IR linked into it, right? And you wanted to support multiple platforms. What you'd probably do is compile LLVM IR for a handful of platforms using like, you know, you could use Clang with like a target triple and have it generate code for various target triples. And then each LLVM IR would be, you know, like maybe have like a named suffix. So it would be, like here you have addints.ll, maybe it would be, you know, addint, you know, x86-64-Linux or addints x86-64-macOS or FreeBSD or whatever other variants that you want to support. And they may look mostly identical for most purposes. And so like, I guess what I'm getting at is, the more complex your C file, the more likely it is that there are incompatibilities in what you across the platforms that you may want to support. And so you may need different LL files. And so what probably happens is you end up using an if def guard on your use statements. So you do like use LLVM colon addints dash x86-64 dash Linux if, you know, using the suffix if def for checking and make sure it's Linux and what is it LP64 or LLP64? I don't remember exactly the right ifdefs in Pony, but basically you'd start correlating use statement ifdefs to a particular LL file that was generated by Clang for that target. And at that point, you're expecting that the data layout may be different in some ways. And there's some cases where that ends up mattering and some cases where it doesn't. Like for your addints, it's unlikely that the data layout would change significantly. It's unlikely that you're going to get, you know, very many incompatibilities across a given, you know, target triple. But it is, if you start to do something like include some huge C library like, you know, GTK, and you're generating you have some C code that wraps GTK, and then, you know, it's like wraps GTK macros, for example, and the macros do like a wide variety of stuff. And then like it gets rather complex, and the likelihood goes up that there's maybe incompatibilities in the data layout. And so I'm not quite sure how to handle this case elegantly. On some level, it would be maybe nicer to start integrating libclang and actually really just compile the C files on the platform where your app is being compiled. And then you get the right, you get the right data layout. But then, you know, if you try to cross compile, I don't know that, is anybody really cross compiling on Pony right now? I think it's possible, but not very commonly used.
I don't know, but the other question I'd have on that regard is, if we do end up linking libclang, then that means that they would have to have the header files for whatever they're linking against.
Yes, yes, that's the...
Which will probably end up pulling the compiler in anyway. So, yeah.
I mean, just not that I have much context on this, but what is the motivation for wanting to be able to link in the LLVM IR rather than just building your library separately and linking it statically, as you mentioned in the beginning?
So there are some there's some things that Pony, because Pony is very strongly typed,
mm-hmm.
Some libraries are, should we say, flexible in their understanding of typing. There are times when you will need to effectively cast between types, and Pony does not allow you to do that because it's a type-safe language. And so sometimes you have to add a little shim, like a little C shim to do that, and then instead of wrapping the library directly, you wrap the shim. Another example would be Pony does not allow you to put a struct on the stack. Struct. So that's another example where you'd have to write a small shim to do it. So I wasn't so much for this particular functionality, I wasn't necessarily thinking of, you know, like big huge libraries. My use case for this is pretty much shims.
Okay, that makes sense. So just so that it's easier to link against existing libraries without having to write additional code in order to manage that wrapping.
Or more accurately, when the person gets it on there, when the person downloads it, they don't have to compile my shim.
Yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense, it can just be the end, just like a Pony file.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess in that, thanks for asking that, because it kind of, you know, brings back the point about like this being, which I was temporarily forgetting for a moment. My mind was going all generalized, and I was forgetting that this is really about small shims that you are not trying to get too complicated with. And you have some, you have some like human capability to give oversight into what these LL files are actually doing, right? It's not super helpful to create an LL file that is way more complicated than you can understand, because at that point you might as well be compiling a static library and linking it in. So some of the casting stuff that Red is talking about, I mean, that's stuff that could be done even just with handwritten LLVMIR, although that's kind of a specialized skill set, because the LLVMIR is valid source code, right? And so it's kind of just allowing you to include some LLVM source code into your program. And so maybe what I'm getting at with the target layout is not super critical. I guess just, you know, when we're documenting this feature, we may want to mention something along the lines of, you know, like what this is intended for, small shims and not like compiling a huge large library into LLVMIR. Like you should really in that case be doing either dynamic or static linking of like a real library. If that's kind of documented as like the main use case, and if we have if that's just mentioned, I guess that's good enough. And then for this target layout warning, Red, I'm kind of thinking that we just totally suppress the warning. And well,
I guess I kind of feel like it's better to leave the warning in, because then at least if there is an issue, it might make you aware of it. But
those things always come back to haunt you, right?
Yeah.
Maybe what we need is our own warning that's like, well, so we should get a warning for the target triple. I'm just wondering what cases this is actually going to come up, right? Because we, this is, I think these are, when I looked into these are about alignment of things. And I'm struggling to think of an example where that, well, I mean, I'm sure there are examples, but I'm just not thinking of a concise one to think about. Okay.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a fan. I'm, you know, I actually kind of like the idea of you know, actually having libclang in, but I think libclang is a more long-term thing, so.
Yeah.
And arguably,
I mean, and you're right that it requires the tool chain, like, it actually kind of gets in the way of the cross-compiling case, because you would need, you would need the header files for your target compilation target to be there in the include path as well. I mean, I don't know the cross-compilation story for Pony is very well fleshed out right now, like I said, because I don't know if people are doing it, but.
I saw one case of someone actually compiling, this was a couple of years ago, compiling Pony onto microcontrollers, and it blew my mind.
Yeah, that is, blows my mind as well in terms of, like, yeah, the amount of shimming that would need to be done.
But yeah, I don't know if anyone's actually doing it out there in the wild.
The thing is, like, this module you've defined has, it's not using the features of the data layout that would make the difference between these two data layouts matter.
Right.
Just trying to think if there's some way to be smarter about the warning. Because if you have a warning that's kind of always there when someone's doing the LLVM linking stuff, they're just going to ignore the warning, and it's like, it wasn't useful to show the warning in the first place if it's always present and not something to pay attention to.
Pardon my ignorance, because I don't really know the details of LLVM, but what is the issue there? I mean, just from the wording of the warning in terms of data layout, I assume that it's the in-memory layout of data structures, which then could go awry.
So it's let me find my notes for each one of these points, because I did look at them. I think it was in a private message with Red that I had those notes.
I don't want to derail anything. I'm just interested because I don't actually know this stuff.
I think this is a totally valid thing to talk about here. So all right. I couldn't find documentation on this format, so I was just looking at the parser code that LLVM uses to parse this string. So in the shorter string, the components are, okay, so the little e tells us it's little endian, and then there's an m colon e that tells us mangling mode for elf. There is...
C.
What was that?
Oh, no, okay. I see what you're stepping through now. Now it makes a bit more sense.
And then I64 colon 64 says the I64 type has a 64-bit ABI alignment. And F80 colon 128 says the F80 type has a 128-bit ABI alignment.
Mm.
F80 type's not used anywhere in this program, like, for example, right? And then... Right. Their native integer types are 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit, and 64-bit. That's with the N8:16:32:64. And then there's S128, which says the stack natural alignment is 128. Now, all of those points are identical in both strings. Where it is different is on the P271, like the, I don't have the right tab open. P270:32:32, P271:32:32, P272. So these are different types of pointers. I don't know off the top of my head what they are, but the person I spoke to on the Discord for LLVM says that P271 is 64 bits by default in the one where it's implicit. Here we're using 32 bits, and so I actually don't, I don't know off the top of my head where P270, P271, P272 actually come into play. I don't know, Jason, does that ring a bell to you at all?
So does that imply that the C-Lang generated code, so that C-Lang emits LLVM?
Sorry, I cannot even unmute myself. But no, I kind of lost track of that conversation, to be honest.
No worries.
So does that imply that the default data layout, which has been generated by the C-Lang compilation of addints in that example, is then different from the data layout for the rest of Pony compiled code?
Yes, that's correct.
Right.
And I'm not sure what the reason for that deviation is.
I think I found it. I found a patch in LLVM where it adds P271:32:32, and P272:64:64. It is used to implement the Microsoft extensions pointer 32, S pointer, and U pointer. So the address space specifies whether a pointer is 32-bit sign extended or 32-bit zero extended or 64-bit. So I'm guessing we do it for Windows support, maybe? Let me drop that link in.
And is that an explicit additional patch to LLVM before it's used with as part of the Pony build?
I don't know enough about this to answer. Let me drop this link. This is not my field of expertise.
Okay, so looking at this link. Okay, so this is not a patch that Pony applies to the LLVM build. This is a patch.
Okay.
The patch. Those patches made to LLVM in 2019.
Yeah. the numbers 270 through 272 are more or less arbitrary. I picked them because they're near 256 to 258, which are the current existing address spaces.
Is it not just a potential issue that the C-Lang that's being used to emit the addints LL is just an older version of C-Lang compared to the LLVM that's linked into Pony?
That's a good question. Red, I thought we looked at that, but did we?
Did we look at what, sorry?
Whether it was just an issue of playing being an older version than the LLVM that's linked into Pony.
I don't recall looking at that.
I thought we did. You know, it's not recorded in our chat because we did it live on the call, but I thought we made sure, because I thought we ran into an initial issue where, like, that was a bitcode issue, so maybe we didn't. I would say, can you look into that, Red, and see if that solves the problem?
I can do so, yeah.
Great. Because I would love to not get rid of these warnings if they are useful.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. So, if just updating Clang is enough, then that's cool. And if it's not enough, then we will look further into why Clang is giving different data layout strings than the LLVM that Pony's using.
Right, I can do that.
Okay, so that's that PR. So now we have another work in progress PR, 3923 from Stuart, so who's joining us today. So thank you for this. This is about simplifying the process for modifying ISO instances of JSON doc after prior creation. Let's see. So, okay. So yeah, Jason made a comment about unnecessary alias type annotations. I have not looked at this in detail yet, but I'm looking now. It's not clear to me why this is needed, in the sense that I don't understand, like, given that the data is already a public field, I don't understand why the data, getting the data field is different from a function that just returns the data field with viewpoint adaptation. Does somebody know why that's the case? Maybe Jason or Stuart?
So other than knowing that it certainly is the case. So I mean, when I tried it in quite a few different ways, if you access the field directly, the type system just doesn't let you through. And I had tried to look at it previously, and then that's when the suggestion was that we actually just use the viewpoint adaption, and yeah, that seems to help the type system along, but whether or not that's correct, I don't have more detail.
Yeah, I think it's mostly that the checking is a bit buggy and kind of nitpicky sometimes. I think we ran into there was like a similar situation that someone ran into, I think, recently as well. But basically, there are some bespoke checks around field access in recover blocks that are not there for method calls. And it's in part because, like, there are some special cases because certain things can't be handled in the capability system today, because of things like reading from fields can't be handled by viewpoint adaptation, because if you did it that way, it would actually drop down to tag today, because there's nothing to read from, like, box and ISO together. And so that would fail. And so there's special behavior to check from reading from fields, but then that check is a bit off when you're reading from a different type of thing. And so because that check is a bit off, it ends up being too strict when you're reading from things that are actually safe to read from inside a recover block. And so I think that's what you're hitting, is that the check in the block is being too strict. Now, what might actually be useful independently of those would be a one-shot method that does the casting too, and that's just a partial method to return the data and do the cast. That could actually be pretty clean, but I guess that probably means that we should fix it. Let me see if I can pull up, either find the existing issue again, or maybe I just didn't catch this when it came up the first time. Do you have the error message on hand that you get when you try to access the field inside the recover block? Because that would help.
I'm trying to think. I actually thought I originally included it in the... I was just checking. I thought I included it in my documentation. I normally do, but I didn't. Let me just check one more. No, unfortunately, I will have to try and reproduce it.
Yeah, okay. So if we...
Let me see.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing in libpony/libponycs/expert/call.c, there's a function called isReceiverSafe. And it says the receiver is safe. So for a field reference, the receiver is safe if the type is sendable. The isReceiverSafe is a reference from a function called check non-sendable recover. Does this sound like the right area of the code?
Yeah, so I think that's the right area of the code, but the thing that needs to happen is basically, so the issue is there's two sets of behaviors that can happen. So one, you can read a value and it so happens that the result of your reading is sendable, then we don't want to reject it, we want to accept it as is and we take the sendable value. The other alternative is like it's not sendable, in which case we want to adapt it down so that it is now sendable, basically. And so that's it can get tricky there potentially.
Well, wouldn't it get adapted down to tag in that case?
So it actually has to get in this case it gets adapted down from ref to ISO, and that would let this go through. And so that's exactly what happens with these apply methods actually.
Yeah, sorry. Adapted, you were talking about viewpoint adaptation, okay.
Yeah.
So there's a JSON doc ISO, and you're reading a ref from within the ISO, and that's viewpoint, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is not, so that's being rejected instead of getting, it should be viewpoint adapted down to ISO inside the recovery block or the like. I think something like that might be what's happening.
Yeah, it's checking the sendability of the field to check if it's safe, and it needs to check the sendability of the viewpoint adapted field, right?
Yeah, it's more to the effect of if it was going to be sendable anyway, then we just bypass entirely. Otherwise, go through the trouble to viewpoint adapt everything is the way I'd do it. It okay. might be that there's a cleaner way to do it, but that's basically what the behavior that is the sort of non-bugged behavior.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's going to be a little bit of a pain.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I guess we could probably do that. It actually comes down to the problem again that if Pony had I think this comes back down to the problem that if box arrow ISO was not tag and actually resulted in something that was still readable, then you'd be fine. I think if you had that, then there would be no need to have the workaround. I think that's the only reason it's there. Well, actually, no. Or yeah, that's where it could happen, because you can basically have a box value. So like you could make a recover block. You could have something which is like ref or box or whatever, and you could have something that's read only, where you can't use viewpoint adaptation. Like eventually you'll try to viewpoint adapt with ISO, and you'll hit a box in there. It'll drop down to tag, and then you'll get an error. You can't read it from there. But eventually, the only thing you were going to do is read a val out of it, and that val would have been safe to read. And so that's why the check is in there that says, well, if the final thing you were going to read is val, then you're fine. You can just do it. Otherwise, we could just use viewpoint adaptation the whole way through.
Okay.
So.
Let's see.
So the thing that we need to open is an issue. Oh, okay. I guess Stuart, we want to isolate down to the error that you get where you can't access the field. So we want to figure out figure out the difference between the method call and the field access, see the compile error you're getting, and then we're going to open up an issue with that, and that's going to be the bug report for the field access.
Okay, cool. No, I can do that. I did just find a snippet of code that I posted on on Zoog a while back, but I can turn that into a bug report, and then I'll just reference that off the work in progress and leave it in work in progress.
Okay.
That makes sense, yeah. And that error message is, I think, is what we're really interested in, to make sure we're looking at the right area of the code to fix.
Mm. Yeah, and that we make sure that I want the code block too to make sure that we've fixed the issue, of course.
Yeah, I didn't really think about the fact that that it might actually be something deeper in the handling of the data types from at the compiler level. I just kind of sort of worked on the assumption that it was all good to go, and that the API was more at fault in terms of the JSON API.
Yeah, I think this is one case where the JSON API is not at fault. I think maybe there are other cases where the JSON API is at fault, this is one case where I think, this is because it should not make any difference whether you're accessing the field directly or invoking a method that just returns the field. That should
be. Yeah, that makes sense.
And this will fix, I mean, if we can fix this, it fixes other things related to, it's better to fix the bug in the language than to work around it if we can.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But if for some reason we find it's unfeasible, of course we can adapt the JSON API to be easier to use, but yeah, it's just better to fix.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I'll put together a better example and post a bug for it.
Thank you. And sorry. Okay, in our auto-generated agenda, the next thing we have, this may already be a ticket that we kind of already discussed, issue ticket 3922, difficult to modify ISO JSON doc. This is different. Okay.
Oh, the one was just I'd already posted the issue for it, and then the suggestion was to tackle it this way. And then because it was a change to the change in the core packages, because I'm sort of new to this, then the suggestion was that I needed to put in an RFC. So I started that, but now we've kind of discussed all of that. So
right.
That's absolutely fine. We'll circle all the way back to filing a bug for the field access. I think I must just can the RFC and the other stuff at the moment so that it doesn't clutter things up.
You could leave it, I would say leave it open in case we see this is not really feasible to solve the bug, right?
We can also just reopen it as necessary.
Yeah. Mm.
Makes sense. Okay.
Cool.
All right. So with that in mind, I see the RFC is also on the list for the auto-generated agenda, so we'll skip over that. And then we also have work in progress RFC for Unix domain socket support. So there was some chatter in the Zulip about Unix domain socket support being missing in Pony. I'll just speak personally that I'm personally in favor of bringing in Unix domain socket support, like as a general idea. I think there had in the past been some pushback from some people that's like, oh, well, why are we adding a Pony API for something that's not going to work on all the platforms that Pony supports? But to me, that's not a super strong argument. We already have some other APIs that are not, like, you know, Capsicum came up in the Zulip chat recently as an example, right? To me, it's not super compelling. And there's also the process monitor, right? Process monitor, I believe, I think we recently added Windows process monitor support. But yeah, in general, I'm personally in favor of adding things like this that are missing, even if they are platform specific, and they'll break, or, you know, they'll, I guess that it's worth talking about how will it be done on, or, you know, what would be the expected behavior if somebody tried to use this part of the net package on Windows? Probably a compile time error.
Is that something that's that you'd be able to trigger it as a compile time error?
I think so. I'm trying to find an example.
Yeah. While I put together this RFC, because I'm quite I've got some stuff that I want to do specifically using Unix domain sockets. But in the discussion today, mostly with Sean on it, he was suggesting that it might be possible to introduce this capability, but without any changes to the runtime library. So I get the sense that the way in which the TCP sockets were originally added definitely required the runtime library to do it. But now with the AIOS, so the async IO calls, it looks like it might be possible to implement this with direct use statements into libc, and then use the async IO to kind of drive things. So yeah, maybe that is something that I need to look at more before. Originally, I thought that this made sense to just kind of rework how the combination between the TCP and UDP stuff worked. But if there's more interest in tackling it in a less runtime library dependent way, maybe that's a better approach.
Yeah, I think, you know, so there's two separate questions, right? Like, one, how many additional, you know, functions do we need to add to the Pony runtime? It could be the answer is zero. It could be one or two. And then the other question is, like, is this better as part of, like, the standard net package, or as part of, like, a user space library that uses FFI to directly reach into the ASIO functions that it needs. I mean, I would probably argue that since we already have the net package that does all the other socket things, that it makes sense to add this here. I could see somebody arguing the other way, but, you know, to me, it makes sense to add it into net. But I think even in net, it's likely that we won't need many, if any, new features to the runtime once you kind of dig into the way it works for the other sockets. And if you want help or guidance with that, I can, you know, I can make time for preparing or answer questions in Zulip. But I'm happy to assist in some way if that's helpful.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, my sense then is that what might be the way to go is to think about including it into the net package, but to try to actually do it without any changes to libpony runtime.
Yeah, and if you encounter things that need changes, I think it's okay to add them. I don't think there's anybody's going to be like, oh, well, we can't do this because it needs new functions in the runtime. I mean, I think we'll have to think carefully about how those functions are designed if they're needed. But I mean, the default case is just to see if they're needed, and they may not be.
Yeah. I mean, what it might require, because sort of skimming through some of the implementation code, it feels like the some of the TCP implementation in the libpony runtime is quite specific, and it's implemented at the runtime level, whereas it seems like it might be possible to implement more of that in straightforward pony code with the FFI, and then directly linking into the async IO. So it might require a bit of a fresh take on how a net package is implemented, but from someone using the package's point of view, it could probably be done in a very similar style, so that it sort of feels reasonable, but possibly without without much underlying C code. So maybe it can be implemented completely with either FFI or the existing async IO mechanisms.
Yeah, I think I don't remember much on the top of my head about like the details of like what C calls need to be, what FFI calls need to be made. I would say, you know, follow the path of least resistance, and I don't think that if it looks like this, you're looking at yourself like this is going to be much cleaner if I can just modify the runtime, then I think that there's a compelling case to just do that. I'm just like looking through like UDP sockets, for example. This is mostly around it's using to start listening, right? There's UDP specific functions to start listening. And then there's Pony OS multicast join and leave and interface. And so I just want to take a look at what those look like under the hood. So this is in socket.c. There it calls a function called multicast change. I'm just trying to see how much this really needed to be in C. I think the reason it's in C might be because of set sock opt. I wonder if there's any pony code that.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a bunch of helpers around the socket options side.
Yeah, so we have in OS socket, OS socket.pony, we have some wrappers around set sock op. So maybe that's. We still need like option names though. I think. Yeah. I would say maybe start digging into it and figure out what makes the most sense to you and why, and then and we can continue the discussion from there. I'm personally just like not opposed to adding more runtime surface if it makes more sense to do it on that side than the pony side. Whatever's easier to maintain, I think, would be what everyone would agree with.
Right. Yeah.
And then. Yeah, so but mostly I think the runtime specific calls are used for like opening a TCP socket for listening, or opening a TCP socket for connection, or in the UDP case, you know, joining a multicast or listening like that. I think it's about opening the socket for the most part. So we may want, just to follow the pattern, we may want runtime functions for opening the domain sockets, and then just use ASIO for the rest of it, kind of like the others do. That's kind of what I would expect as a default, but it's possible you could get there with just FFI, but it just look for the path of least resistance, and then we can talk about your findings. Mm.
Okay, and just in terms of overall process, I've got the it's just as a work in progress, that RFC for the Unix domain sockets. But it kind of feels like I would need to do some more digging to work out what the sort of best approach is. What is the sort of standard approach? Should I just leave this RFC as work in progress until I, you know, get enough time to come up with a viable implementation? Or I don't know what the normal... How this is normally tackled?
Yeah, I think
just from an admin point of view.
Yeah, I think that would be normal. Is to leave it open while you do some more research, or you know, and you can create a a fork that implements some of it enough to do the research, a fork with PonyC, for example, that does enough research to kind of get the general idea. I think just getting more details fleshed out, however long that takes, it's okay to leave the RFC open in a work in progress state.
Okay, cool.
And then one thing I'll note, just since it came up in conversation earlier about platforms. So if you search in the compiler, or sorry, search in the standard library code for something called, where's my window? I had that. Something called compile_error. So compile_error is a special keyword that is used to raise a compile time error, like within a branch of like an if def group.
Oh, okay.
And so there's like for example, in packages /process/_pipe.pony, there's a primitive called error broken pipe that only exists on Windows. And so in the method body for getting that value, it says if def Windows, then 109, else compile error with a string there about the compile error you'd see. And so there is a way to do platform guarded functionality that just flat out fails to compile on certain platforms. So maybe if somebody tries to spin up a Unix domain socket in their code and they're not on Unix, then yell at them. Yeah.
Mm.
Rather than like the alternative being it just like silently does nothing, would be worse, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Or, I was originally just sort of thinking of it as returning a file error or something like that, but this makes more sense.
Yeah, because it'd be better to not have that be a partial operation, because then if you're on Unix, you're like, okay, I'm on Unix. I don't want to catch this error that I'm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better to avoid partial operations if we can, because we in Pony culture, I guess we expect users to handle those errors very closely to the error site. It's not like kind of in some other languages where you raise an exception and you're like, okay, this will kind of never happen.
And just hope it will magically get caught at the top of the level, right?
Yeah, it's like somebody
has to a runtime error somewhere.
And so, yeah, people will grumble at you if you create a situation where somebody has to deal with an error that will never happen on Unix when they create a Unix domain socket.
Yeah, fair enough. And so they should.
Okay. And that is our auto-generated agenda, and we are at time as well. So thanks everyone for attending today, and those who are listening along to the recording later. We'll see y'all next week.